You're speechless. What a treat.
Hello, everybody. This is Again with This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 22, The Circle of Strife. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back. Thank you for your patience while we were on our break last week. We hope you enjoyed those Unlock Patreon episodes. They were both bonkers. Speaking of Patreon, for our next one, Again with This, episode 74 is dropping December 3rd. Let's watch Courtney Thorne Smith's 1997 appearance on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. This is one that got surfaced to us a lot right around the time that Norm Macdonald died, because the reason people remember this appearance by her is that he interrupted it a bunch. He was the first guest of the night, and it's very funny, and it's on YouTube, which we'll link it in the show notes if you want to watch it before we talk about it. And if you want to hear us talk about it on December 3rd, you can support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. You get those bonus episodes at every level of support. Are we ready to begin?
Yes.
All right. Let's start with our D plot. Alan discovers Matt's big secret. At the hospital, David invites Matt to another group hang, this time bowling. And Matt is like, "I have a boyfriend." And David's like, "I was asking as a friend," conceited. Alan is not a reason for Matt to cut himself off from the world, in David's opinion.
Well, I'll say.
Seriously. And Matt is like, yes, okay, but I'm busy tomorrow night anyway, bye. And then it's the bowling party, which Matt is showing up to because Alan canceled on him. And when Matt sees who else is there, he says he used to hang out with all these guys all the time. No evidence of this exists. And they must have thought Matt fell off the face of the earth, and David gay Yodas, that's just for you, Sarah, that people do things when they're ready. And Matt hugs him just as Alan appears. And since that's basically as much sex as he and Matt ever had, Alan is shook and leaves before Matt has seen him. And the next morning, Alan is cold to Matt over breakfast, and Matt doesn't know why, because everyone in this relationship is a real mature adult. And Matt just ignores Alan's manner to invite him to an event on the beach, which we will get to. But Alan snits that maybe Matt would rather bring someone else and finally explains what he's so pissy about. And Matt says it was a friendly hug, but it didn't look like that to Alan. And he insinuates again that David is in love with Matt, to which Matt counters that Alan never shuts up about Val, but then backs off. He can't have this fight now because he's late for rounds. And Alan pouts that Matt's always late for rounds, but also always seems to have time for David. And Matt yells back that Alan's the one who's putting limits on their time together because he's closeted for his career. But then he really does leave, and they leave it there. Good points made on both sides. I would also like to add, break up. You're not a good couple, and you don't get along.
Yeah.
You don't like each other.
And David is out and cuter. So, sorry, it's true.
Mm-hmm. So then at the beach,
solves a lot of problems, just saying.
It's true. At the beach event, and we will get to it, Alan shows up in the nick of time since he had to squeeze in a meeting with Gloria, the producer. And he and Matt both apologize about their fight. What did Gloria want, by the way? Clip two.
Oh, Valerie and I are getting married.
We're on the show.
Now in real life. Oh, come on, Matt. It's for public consumption.
Alan O'Hara!
Yeah.
What year do they think it is that they could just do that? Oh, Gloria Suzanne, happy at last.
I feel like it probably happens more than we ever know for
Probably.
Publicists put people together.
It might have happened. It might have still been happening more then, actually. Mm-hmm. But still, it just seems very, very 60s and Valley of the Dolls to me.
But
not that that's bad, just weird.
Right. But it would be like, 10 years later that the stories would start coming out, and I do not substantiate them, but about Tom Cruise, like, auditioning women to be his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, true.
So, anywho, we have so much more to get to. But first, we have a birthday message for Kristen.
and it is not from Xenu. Michelle, Kristen's sister, let us know that she has a big birthday coming up and that she is a fan of Beverly Hills 90210, Melrose Place, and musicals.
So with that in mind, we've reimagined a few well-known stage shows for characters we all know from the Starverse. We'll hold your place at the TKTS booth while you decide which you want to see the most. There's
Brenda Walsh in The Pygmalion Rewrite, My Unfair Lady.
Billy Campbell in The Dark and Transgressive, Go Back to Driving a Cabaret.
Donna Martin and Joe Bradley in Ageless Classic, Bye Bye Damn Birdie.
David Silver in the recently reopened Methyl Juice.
Jane Mancini in the beloved mid-century show How to Fail in Business Because You Weren't Trying.
Yes, it's just down the street from Stephen Sondheim's I Lost the Company. There's also Sydney Andrews in John Waters' Excessive Hairspray.
Jake Hansen in the 50s nostalgia comedy Greasy Pool Deck.
Noah Hunter in the film adaptation, The Band's Visit to the Peach Pit After Dark Got Cut Because of Music Rights.
Kimberly Shaw in the psychologically wrenching Several Miles West of Normal.
Or Valerie Malone in the hip-hop sensation, Scamilton.
From all of us and your loving sister, Michelle,
happy birthday, Kristen! And now our C-plot. Billy grieves by being a huge asshole at work. Billy finds Amanda at the office to announce this. Clip 3.
I'm repitching the Imagine Mabel ice cream account.
Okay. This gets explained later, but I was like, what is this brand? Like, I heard
Imagine Mabel.
That's what I heard. My options in my notes are Imagine Mabel, Imagine Mabel, Imagine Nabel. Like, maybe nail down the pronunciation before you pitch, fucking mush mouth. I think I have a guess as to why this
Tipper Gore trying to find backwards masking on records. And it's like, he says Satan, don't you hear it? No. Yeah.
Anyway, Amanda says this in response, clip 4.
So you can fail miserably a second time?
Yes! Be meaner to him!
Yeah, really. Drive him out.
Yeah, drive him out to the country and leave him there. Billy smirks that he failed the last time because he was saddled with Brooke, but he expects to be successful if he teams up with Allison. And Amanda suspects his real motive is rekindling something with Allison, which he denies. And she will think about it. And he's like, think about it now? I feel like he added the question mark and that the line as written was even shittier, but that Andrew Shue lacked the courage of Billy's convictions to be like, think about it now. But anyway.
Yeah.
Amanda's not so impressed by his moxie that she doesn't warn him not to promise more than he can deliver. And it turns out he already did, because only after he gets Amanda's sign off does he inform Allison that he drafted her for this assignment. She's not impressed, but she doesn't refuse to do it, instead changing the subject to whether he's throwing himself into work to avoid his feelings about Brooke and should maybe see a therapist instead. And when he reminds her that she begged to get more work after Haley died, she gives in, though she adds that she's not sure she likes Billy's new confidence. I mean, no one does, but the sad sack days were also bad. He's just bad.
Yeah. And I mean, what they're trying to do is make him into this like mean, like heel turn dickwad, but he lacks the necessary oomph as an actor to make it convincing. Mm-hmm. So it's just funny. And it's real funny.
It is. So sometime later, two old bags enter the D&D conference room, and we find out that what Billy was trying to say earlier was Madge and Mabel, because those are their names, and the ice cream company they founded is made named for them. And all it takes for Billy to seem on the ball per Madge is knowing which one of them is which, like, the bar is on the ground. But these aren't regular old bags. They are characters. Clip 5.
Who's going to do the talking?
I am.
Well, that makes you either brave or stupid. All right, make it memorable. Can't remember it, ain't going to buy it.
I mean, apparently this is true, since Madge didn't remember Billy washing out the last time he tried to pitch them, apparently. And it's been a while since we've heard any shitty pitches at D&D, so let's fucking go. This clip is long, but it's important. Yes.
Clips it in. Is.
It's dawn in the country.
roosters crowing, butter churning, ladies putting apple pies out to cool. We see a farmhand walking toward a pickup truck, a gallon of ice cream in each hand. He gingerly places the ice cream into the wooden refrigerator on top of his truck. And as he drives off,
a full screen logo and voiceover announces Madge and Mabel's ice cream, the taste of country freshness.
We've seen that 5 million times.
And we knew you were going to say that. Because you're right, it isn't you. You are cantankerous as hell. The two of you haven't stopped bickering since you walked in here. And your approach to your product is so far removed from what the public buys, it's not even funny.
Billy.
You want a kick butt campaign? You gotta bring you and your product into the 90s. All right? Now picture the two of you, only a lot tougher and a lot wilder. And you're both wearing black leather jackets, you're smoking a couple of stogies, and you're sitting on two of the biggest, baddest motorcycles you've ever seen. And just as you burn rubber out onto a dirt road, the hippest male voice around says, Madge and Mabel. Absolutely, definitely not your grandmother's ice cream.
Well, you got guts, kid.
That is a kick butt campaign.
And if you increase your ad budget, I'll even go shopping with you to buy the jackets myself.
I hate it.
0 stars.
This concept is also just as big a cliche as the other one, and it already was at the time. Like the rapping granny, the tough old bird. You know, this is not your father's Oldsmobile, I'm pretty sure, predates this episode.
That was
episode.
Like the 70s. Yeah.
Like, this is very bad. But when Madge and Mabel have left, Allison asks if Billy just set her up. He did, but he didn't plan to. He was just inspired. She is disgusted enough to stick her tongue out again, so that's now back in the toolkit, apparently. Ugh. The next night, Billy lets himself in at Allison's with a card to sign for the old bags. He bought them those leather jackets, as promised, and Allison's appalled that he's acting like nothing happened, and he says what happened is that they signed the contract of the year, which he couldn't have done without her, and she's like, by making me look like a moron? Did he know they would hate the pitch he told her to give? And he claims he didn't use her. He focused. Clip 7.
It's like I'm focusing right now on what you're thinking.
He's not the same guy that he used to be. This is unfamiliar territory, and it's scary.
It's dangerous, and you just don't know how you feel about it.
Billy, stop it.
Stop? That's not what you want. No, the danger excites you. Yep, it does. It excites you. When I walk into the room, your heart starts beating fast. You're trembling right now. There's not a damn thing you can do about it.
Oh, yeah. Who's more dangerous than Billy Campbell? Good God.
Yeah, literally any other line delivery, and this is actually assault, but it's Billy. Yeah. So it's merely laughable instead of felonious? Like, writers, you have to wonder if a decision was taken privately and without letting any of the actors know that it's like, since he can't do anything, let's just try to make him do everything. Like, what's next? He gets hit on the head and thinks he's French? Like, fine. Great. Sure.
Yeah. So their story resolves in the A plot. We will see them there. But for now, let's talk about the B plot. Joe accidentally does a corporate espionage. Jane reluctantly lets Richard into her garage studio after he shades her security system of a chain lock on the door. And he offers her a deal. He has heard they're both being interviewed by Fashion News, and he won't hassle her about scheduling her fashion show the day before his if she will agree to be civil about him to the reporter, and he'll do the same, and she'll think about it. And when we see Jane next, she's having a nooner with Jake on the floor of his apartment on top of a bunch of sketches. Like, what does she need the studio for if she's like just bringing them over there? Anyway, there's a knock at the door. It's Joe with a pile of folders in her arms, which she soon drops on a pile of more of Jane's stuff, which is also all at Jake's for some reason. And When Jane comes out for the back, we learn that Joe took pictures of all of Jane's mannequins as a record of her inventory. And it wasn't clear to me if she meant her mannequins at the garage or if she still somehow had mannequins at Richard's. Like, I don't know which ones they're talking about. We never see them.
Yeah. And it doesn't, like, is that for her book? Because whatever her work product is at Hart Mancini Designs is mm-hmm. probably the property of Hart Mancini Designs, right?
So, right. Yes.
IP, 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 IP.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Doesn't
Regardless.
Matter. It's Jane. Who cares?
And she's grateful. And when Joe picks up her papers again, she takes some of Jane's sketches with her accidentally. And when she gets back to the office, Richard wants his prints and yells at Joe when she says she hasn't made them yet, because this relationship is great. And he bitches mm-hmm. that he needs better designers or a muse. He can't find an idea to set the tone for his show. But he does need lunch, so he and Joe head out, leaving Stephanie, Jane's replacement, the pile of sketches that she's going to be sewing from. And as we all saw coming, the sketchbook at the bottom of the pile is Jane's, and Stephanie's like, now we're talking, but are we, though?
We are not.
We're not, as you'll see in the visual aids.
They're you back. Sure will. Barf.
That night, Jane comes by to look through Jake's place for the sketchbook she has now noticed is missing and contains all the inspiration for her new line. She's about to go check the garage for it, but he stops her so they can kiss, and it works. And then I guess she just gives up trying to find this extremely important sketchbook, because mm-hmm. when we see her next, it's at least one day later, and she's calling Jake in to watch Richard's TV interview, and he is perfectly gracious about Jane while sitting in front of what Jane recognizes as her designs, which, honey, I don't know if I'd go out of my way to claim that shit, but she
it's
assumes
a lot
that he's,
of animal print.
Yeah, it's animal print plus 20s shapes. It's like two great tastes that don't taste great together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she assumes that Richard stole her sketchbook. And for some reason, Jake defends Richard. That was the weirdest part. Like, since mm-hmm. when is Jake on Richard's side in anything? But Jane is too furious to back down and takes off straight to the studio to accuse him. And looking smug as hell, Richard says everything he didn't design himself came from someone else who works there. And the fight continues, confusingly for everyone. Clip 8.
Banner day, huh, Joe? Not only did you steal my sketch pad at Jake's, you back it up with photographs.
That is not true.
You come over saying that you want to help me? I can't believe I fell for this crap.
What the hell is she talking about?
Oh, please, like you don't know?
I photographed a line as a favor. She thinks I did it for you. I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
How could you do that?
Nice touch, but it's not going to work. You're a liar and...
Just over a rat.
Stop it. You want to play hardball, Richard? Well, I am in the game all the way.
Did you steal my negatives?
Why, because it occurred to me out of the blue that you went behind my back and helped out the enemy?
I had a crisis of conscience after you stole the Marshall account from her.
Oh, so you figured that I'd just follow suit by stealing her designs?
Did you?
No. If our designs are identical to hers, it's purely coincidence.
That's a big coincidence.
Well, I certainly didn't take them. So if you want to play detective and prove me wrong, go right ahead.
Okay. It'd be one thing if he said, if our designs are similar to hers, it's a coincidence because you've all been working together. Like, it would make sense that you would have draw from the same, like, set of inspirations or whatever. But if they're identical, that's sketchy. Like, come on, dude.
And it's, like, it's bad. And no one's mm-hmm. gonna, like, you know, the fashion press would not be like, oh, well, he says it's a coinkydink.
Yeah.
Shrug. Also, wasn't it the Jordan account? Not the Marshall account?
Yes.
Does anyone want to, I don't know. Care about previous episodes? Where's Chris? Just wondering.
So that night, Joe confronts Richard with Jane's sketches, which she found in the trash. She thought maybe she picked them up by accident at Jake's place, but did Richard draw this? And he repeats that he didn't steal anything from Jane, which is technically true.
Yeah.
Because Joe did. But then he says he drew them, and that is a lie. And Joe looks disturbed that Richard would remorselessly lie straight to her face. But after he hassles her about it, she claims she believes him. She thinks they should both forget today happened and they kiss. But neither of them seems okay with it, as you will see in the visual aids. Like, they both are like, well, that was awful. I can't believe we're in this together.
Yeah. Yeah. Just break up. Joe's hair looks really good lately.
It is.
Just going to observe.
Yeah, we were talking about it with Heather and Jessica that she got some highlights. They're very flattering.
It's cute.
Let's close up with our A plot. Legal problems break out all over the Burns and Mancini offices. Sydney is still dressing like a Hitchcock heroine, this time in a very sharp emerald green shantung suit and a half updo of what was formerly her dumb flapper hair. She looks so good in this scene. This color on her is magic. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is.
So Kimberly arrives. Sydney confronts her about Michael. She believes he loved her before Kimberly made Sydney open up to her in therapy and used information from their sessions against her. And Kimberly blows past this. She's there to see Michael, casually calling him honey before telling him to fire Sydney. And he claims Sydney's a great receptionist and that patients love her and, like, we love her. I don't believe either of those things is true, though.
No. Also, we've seen, what, one patient in the office in the entire lifetime of this partnership.
So. So then Kimberly locks the door of Michael's office and says this, clip 9.
Perhaps you need a visual aid.
Oh my God, she listens. Thanks so much.
Hey, girl. Leave it to the professionals, though.
So what she means is that she's going to make it worth his while sexfully. And he tries to resist letting her do sex on him in the office, but he relents, murmuring that Sydney is so fired as we bang into the credits. Then Peter visits Alicia at her office to ask why she rushed out of his place that morning. She says she saw him going through her shit, so she looked into his shit too and knows about the attempted murder and his very light sentence. So forgive everything I said in the previous episode. I got the timeline messed up because I prepped both of these at the same time. Sorry. I also forgot about his 2,000 community service hours at the free clinic. Remember that? That was a thing for a second. Not that we ever saw him there.
Not that, I don't think that happened.
No. He doesn't bother trying to deny any of it. But then she also mentions his part in the sketchiness around Jack's death, and he says he is innocent of that one, which he is. So she wants to know what's going on between him and the Parisis, and it's this, clip 10.
Bobby's old man, Vince Parisi. He ruined my father's business. He left him penniless. My father killed himself.
Well, that's quite a story.
I don't have to sell you on how my family was destroyed.
Okay.
Well, you better sell me because I think you're full of shit.
No kidding. Like, maybe a tiny bit more detail in the story. Like, his business of what? Like, how did he? And also, was this before or after his sister also died, I think we were told, from her mental health issues in some unspecified way, which was the reason he was supposedly helping Kimberly at the beginning of the season.
And have we ever seen him and Noah Hunter together? Like,
right.
Back east. Oh, shit. Here we go.
So Alicia
cue the Mozart.
Alicia assumes Peter's sleeping with her was just an op, and he says it was at first. But now he's in love with her, and she tries to act tough, but she loves him too. And they make out with, like, slapstick-level ferocity after this, which you can see in the visual aids. It's like something out of Airplane or something. So the pretext Michael comes up with to fire Sydney is not that she eavesdrops on calls or keeps erratic hours or any of the other shit we have seen her do, but that she screwed up his lunch order. Okay, and she also believes Michael can't fire her without Peter's sign-off, but Michael says the partnership has no bylaws, which, understatement.
Yeah.
And she dumps his rejected Chinese food out on his head and threatens that this isn't over. And so then she gets all dressed up in a gown and cap and mask to crash Peter's surgery, taking off her mask first before asking which guy he is, which contaminates the sterile field, as he said. This is a good reason to fire someone from a job in a healthcare profession. So he hustles her out of the OR to say he agrees with Michael. As a receptionist, she sucks, and she threatens this, clip 11.
I assure you, if I lose my job, you'll be coming to me to pimp you out for work.
Okay? Like, what? Also, he would probably like that. Sorry.
Yeah. They do have very funny chemistry. Like, this is an episode where there's some like snidely whiplash machinations on Burns's part that are very obvious. But then when he's playing off Michael and or Sydney, he is very funny and going very big, which I think is smart.
Yes. 100%
he has crackling chemistry with Laura Layton. So
yes,
very funny.
They're very screwball-y in a great way. So then Michael finds Kimberly at the hospital the next day to gloat about firing Sydney, but she doesn't care because she came home the night before to divorce papers. And Michael's like, oh, right, whoops. And again, she says they were at their place. So again, he put a deposit down on that other house that she was going to rent as a pointless and expensive romantic gesture, I guess. But anyway.
Also, why didn't these automatically go to her care of the county jail where she should be awaiting trial on numerous serious felony charges?
Yeah. Like, does anyone who's in charge of her even know where she is? Or the more to the point, is anyone still in charge of her? Because it seems like no.
Yeah. Could we just get a throwaway line that was like, and then the Department of Parole went back to his home planet? Like, fine.
Yeah.
Thank you. Just acknowledge that you're in there and alive. Send us a message. Blink three times if you understand how parole works.
Right. I mean, if in the last episode, if they can be like, there was a problem and Vic got released accidentally from jail, like something.
Right.
Something.
That was, oh God. Well, yeah.
So anyway. Michael filed for divorce when Kimberly was institutionalized, which was, by the way, months ago, so they really took their time. But he says they can just not sign the papers, and he tears them up. But she's scared the old Michael will come back and ruin her life again, and she says she'll sleep at the hospital that night, which, like, get a hotel room? And when Michael reaches for her arm, she shrinks away, because she's learned that move, and she wants to make sure that she wants the relationship and feels safe in it. And then Amanda's come to visit Bobby in his office when he announces that he wants her to be the first member of his company's board of directors so that she'll have a vested interest in the company, which, like, I think that already happened when you took all her money, but sure. Mm-hmm. She agrees. And he goes to get her coffee while she looks through the paperwork. And so she goes looking for a calculator and finds a file folder with the Shooter's logo either printed or stamped on the front of it. And Jake's name on the tab. And, like, whichever one it is, he definitely did not get fucking file folders printed. I don't even believe Jake would buy a rubber stamp.
No.
With the Shooter's logo. Like,
and why would you put, like, you assumed an illegal debt.
Yeah.
Why would you put any writing on it that was not like, I mean, I'm actually surprised that it wasn't stored in a larger folder labeled illegal debt consolidation. Like, right. Jesus.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, learn from people who keep porn on their desktop. Call that taxes. Anyway, Amanda, I've heard tell. Amanda looks at it and doesn't like what she sees. And sometime later, Peter's making Alicia martinis at his place after work. She's looked into the politician that he asked about and has embarked upon phase one, clip 12.
I got Bobby to sign some blank checks, and then I predated them and made them out to Senator Wilcox.
Oh, your personal stock just went up 10 points. You gave us proof that the so-called legitimate Bobby Parisi has been greasing a senator for a cable license.
Peter, this is all about your father, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's me. Question. What's in it for you?
I don't know.
Think.
A rider in the cable contract. In the event of the breach, I have the option to buy the company. For example. Not that you're not enough.
That's why we both win.
Your father must have meant a lot to you, want this so badly.
I want other things more.
Yeah, me too.
Who cares?
Like, for any of this plot to make sense. Get to the Boning Amanda Works factory, Jesus Christ.
Honest to God, like, the only thing more boring than Jane's fashion travails is Bobby's fucking cable company. Like, who cares? At least with the fashion story, we can see the dresses. Like, everything in Bobby's thing is completely abstract.
Well, and like, second prize is two cable companies? Alicia, what are you fucking doing? You went to law school. You want to run a fucking public utility?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Also, like, I guess his dad is just completely out of the picture now, because, like, three episodes ago, he was holding people at gunpoint, and I was like, well, I guess I lost this one. Bye. Like, what?
Back to stalking Claire Kincaid.
Right. Well, that was a good one. Later still, Kimberly stands on the deck of the beach house and reminisces to Michael about how excited she was to live there with him when the real estate agent first brought her there, and she no longer feels as hopeful about them. He asks her to marry him again. She thinks it's a little too soon, but he has everything he wants in his life except her. It took him a while to grow up, but she can help him be the man he can be, which nowhere does he claim his goal is to be a good or even better man than he currently is. Just like,
that is very important to acknowledge that, like, let's look at the text. Yeah.
Yeah. So he repeats his proposal with a please, and this time she and her frosty blue eyeshadow agree. And the next day, Sydney and her great black and red pop art flower dress. We love it.
So good.
Visual aids. So good. Show up at the Burns and Mancini office with process server Bob, clip 13.
Read 'em and weep, boys. I'm suing you for sexual harassment.
What? What? Love it.
Peter's what is so good. He's pronounces it like he's being big, as Sarah said, but it's also like the what of an old man who like really didn't hear you and is getting frustrated, like, what? Anyway.
It's like the magnet that I have on my fridge, which my husband got me. These like marriage is just people screaming what at each other from opposite sides of the house.
It's true.
That was the what of that magnet.
It's true.
So good.
So the basis for Sydney's claim is that they made sexual jokes at / around her, touched her inappropriately, and, you know, Peter pimped her out. And after she's left, Peter blames Michael for this, even though the pimp was him. So, like, come on, guy. There's plenty of blame to go around. So then Peter calls Amanda at work just as she's standing next to Billy, who I guess is celebrating his new ice cream client by dressing like a milkman. He's in a white button-down shirt tucked into, like, the lightest chinos that ever chinoed. And no belts, of course.
And I think they're linen as well.
Possibly. They're very, very light. Anyway, Peter invites Amanda and Bobby out to a fundraising cocktail party that night for Senator Wilcox, a big wheel with cable companies. And Amanda guesses Alicia deserves credit for this. And when she adds that Alicia's impressive, Peter replies that she is, but she's not Amanda. And Amanda's not sure what to think. And walking through the cocktail party later, Amanda mentions the Jake file. And at this point, this was at least one full day ago, by the way.
Yeah.
So again, to your like charging station point.
Yeah. Like this didn't come up.
Yeah.
Like even the part where like there's obviously a stencil for the shooter's like intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't even mention it on that basis. That you're like, why do you have his branded office supplies that Shelley apparently made with the money she didn't embezzle? Like, hey, remember Shelley? I guarantee you no one in the writer's room does.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
So Bobby easily explains that he had no ulterior motive and is willing to help anyone who's trying to go legit since no one ever helped him. And Amanda's convinced, which, fair, that, like, does seem to be the case.
Yeah. Although Jake, we are at the point now where that people aren't Googling shit is, like, it's bad. Like, Alicia, at least, should have trusted but verified.
Right.
Peter's like, when she was looking into the attempted murder charges, wouldn't she maybe also have found on LexisNexis that his father is alive and well and doing like latch hook rugs in outside St. Louis? Like, I don't know.
I mean, maybe it's true. Like, we don't know. That's the point. That's what's so frustrating about the storyline. Like, we don't know if either of Peter's stories about his family are true. Like, the one with the sister, I think, probably has a closer chance because he wasn't trying to, like, work any scam at that point.
Right.
That was just to explain, like, why is this person being nice to the bomber? So, okay.
Yeah.
But with Alicia, it's like every other episode, he's like, well, I was trying to get to Bobby, but I, that's just an op. I was really trying to get to you. And then today in this episode, he's like switched it back. So it's like, fucking decide. Anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing to note about this scene is that Amanda's hair looks fucking horrible. It's so sticky.
Deranged. Like, why? This is an event.
Yeah.
I just feel like Locklear didn't know that this wasn't a rehearsal. And everyone was like, whatever. Like, we got what we needed. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where they are, but it looks like it was too much salt air, because it just looks frizzy and sticky and awful. Mm-hmm. It's in the visual aids. So then Peter appears to introduce Bobby to the senator, and their meeting is unremarkable, but the party photographer snaps several shots of the senator and Bobby shaking hands. And Alicia pulls the photographer away, handing him a bunch of cash, telling him to send her the photos and negatives. And Peter congratulates her as they watch Bobby and Amanda clink glasses. Over to Sydney's virtually empty apartment, where Kimberly's come to apologize for telling Michael to fire her. And this is where we get a better view of the pop art dress. Love it still.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first Sydney's heard that Kimberly was behind the firing, and Kimberly urges Sydney not to punish Peter and Michael for something Kimberly did. Sydney can have her old job back, and Kimberly would also like Sydney to be her maid of honor. Clip 14.
A very solid effort, Kimberly. Excellent eye contact, really.
Sydney. You and I both know how it feels not to be forgiven. I'm asking you to look into your heart.
Kimberly, seeing as you're the one to blame for all of this, the woman who stole my cushy life and everything that matters to me, I think I'll take them for all they're worth and credit you. You know, you really should consider public speaking lessons, Kimberly, especially in the sincerity department. Fool me once, shame on me. Try and fool me twice. It's definitely war.
It's also definitely been more than twice. Come on now. Like,
yeah.
We watched the show.
Yeah. Won't someone help Sydney? But Sydney is now helping herself, so
she is.
Great.
She is. And
that dress. Oh, my God.
The dress is, I mean, it's got to be a big boost to her confidence, I would think. But the, you know, I understand the economy of characters problem, especially on soaps, but like, why would Kimberly ask Sydney to be her maid of honor? Like, why?
Yeah, no.
Anyway, at the beach house before the wedding, Sydney eavesdrops on Peter and Michael strategizing about how to get out of her lawsuit. Michael suggests giving her a 10% cut, and Sydney announces that she'll take it and also wants voting rights in the partnership. This dress is also not bad, by the way. You can see it in the visual aids. And which, with no option, I guess, they agree to her terms, her job back, and veto power over decisions big and small. And Sydney has the papers on her, and the doctors bitterly sign. And Kimberly comes in right afterward and is not happy to have been outmaneuvered by Sydney, who now would love to be Kimberly's maid of honor. So that's nice. And then Kimberly and her silver silk sheath, which she looks amazing in, struggle to the altar in the beach winds. That was like, it looks like she's about to be blown away.
I know, that was mean.
And even when she gets to the altar, her face kind of makes it look like she's thinking about bolting.
Yeah.
Unclear. Allison is in this eggplant colored suit with like an embellished collar that 1000% Elaine Bennis had.
Yes, she absolutely did, in several colors. Yep.
And I looked for it in, I tried to Google like an image search to find it to show a side by side, because I don't know the episodes that it was in. It was a bunch, but I didn't even know what to call that color. Like, it's not really eggplant. It's not really lavender or mauve. It's weird. But anyway, look at this in the visual aids. You'll be like, oh yes, I've totally seen Elaine in that suit.
Yeah, for sure.
When it comes to the vows, Michael and Kimberly just do boilerplate. So, like, what is the point of any of this? And it seems like Kimberly's hesitant, as I said, but they both do. And Peter and Sydney keep covertly side-eyeing each other in this, as you can see.
Being
in
like,
gift form.
Very funny.
So I checked. It's less than 60 seconds from the end of the wedding march to the start of the recessional. I hope they don't expect presents for this half-assed shit, because, like, put some effort into it. My God.
I mean, even mine, I think we got 7 minutes out of it, but...
Like, if you're going to make people dress up and go stand on the beach in February or March, whenever this was, like, come on. Give them a show.
Yeah, or at least get some lobster roll. I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
So then in the middle of the reception, Billy embarrasses both Allison and himself. Clip 15.
Hey, listen up. In front of all my friends, I just want to say that I am asking Allison Parker to move in with me. So what do you think, huh? Win-win situation? Colleagues by day, lovers by night?
All right, we stimulate each other. We're a team. There's no stopping us.
Billy, you're drunk, and I'm not one of your clients. You can't just sell me like you did with Madge and Mabel.
Okay, how about this? I love you. Will you move in with me?
How about no? And stop using words like lover and stimulated. And also, who are these extras at this wedding who presumably are there to see slash support Michael and or Kimberly, who are like, Billy's asking her to move in. Yeah. What the fuck, guy? Calm down.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it's like when you're at a restaurant and they start singing Happy Birthday and you're like, all right, yay. But, you know, whether you know them or not, this is like that, perhaps.
Maybe.
Maybe.
One guy sounded profoundly stoked, though.
He did, but that was probably because he could be like, that was me when he watched the episode with his friends.
And we have just resurfaced his contribution.
We did.
Glad
Good
we
job,
could help.
Kyle.
I was going to say Toby, but... Could have been both of them.
So there's a pregnant pause, but Allison is saved from answering by Kimberly calling for the single ladies to assemble so she can throw her bouquet at them. While Allison realizes she fucked up by not cutting off whatever's going on with Billy sooner. And then when Billy catches the bouquet, he grabs Allison around the shoulders, kisses her aggressively, and says he'll take that as a yes. Yuck! I hate this guy! Boo!
Yeah. Or as they say en français,
bu. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Sydney, she got everything she wanted for once.
Yeah. Yep.
And her costumer really well. Also for once, that dress.
Finally. Beau free living. That's how you do it.
Least valuable player. Fucking Billy.
Yeah. Honorable mention to Alicia. Like, again, Google or Netscape, something.
Yeah.
Look something up somehow. Lycos, go get some information, please. Mm-hmm. Next time on Again With This, the black male Moebius that is Parisi Cable threatens to strangle literally half the cast. Richard is all wet, and Sydney would like to know if Kimberly and Michael have Prince Albert in a can. You're going to want Malox in a can before you contend with our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. Or throw on a motorcycle jacket Billy paid for and head over to our Patreon page. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. You'll find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Madge, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Mabel, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And there's not a damn thing you can do about our producer, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.